Morning, everyone. Today's daf in Nedarim is Chaf Hey. Thank the Lupin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf. Daf is long as Zechon Ishmas Liba, Gabriela Bashmuel. We started the mission yesterday on Chaf Dal Amud Beis, and we are in the third parak of the Masechta. And by that we mean that there are four Nedarim that don't need a She'ela. Four different categories of Nedarim that, as a result of the fact that you weren't really intending on making a neder, so as a result of that, there's no need to even require a she'ela. You're not locked into a neder. It's understood that you didn't, even though linguistically you said the word neder, but you didn't really mean it. So the first example that we spent the last couple of days learning was nidrei zirusin, where a person is just trying to motivate somebody else to move from a position that he's at. And the truth of the matter is, he didn't really intend to make a neder. The classic example, the first example that was given in the beginning of the perek, was two people negotiating over the price of an item, each person trying to get the other person to move from his position. So even though each one takes his puts his heels in the sand and says, this is what I want and this is what I think, and I'm going to make a neder, but the truth of the matter is that everyone's understanding that no one really means the neder that they're saying. It was just to motivate the other person to move. Another example that was given in the second Mishnah of this parak was a person is being a little bit stubborn. I'm trying to get him over to eat over by my house, and he doesn't want to eat by me. So I make a neder to try to encourage him to eat by my house, according to Rav Elazar ben Yaakov. That's also nidrei zirusin. Although, as we pointed out at the conclusion yesterday's daf, the Chachamim do in fact argue on this example. We saw a Ran yesterday that gave us a reason why this example may be slightly different than the first example that was given the first Mishnah, but either way, the Gemara concludes that the halacha does in fact follow like Rav Elazar ben Yaakov. Now we're up to category number two. Category number two is the kind of neder that a person makes, which is an exaggerated statement. The Mishnah gave two examples. So what we're going to do is we're going to go back over the Mishnah again. I know we did the Mishnah yesterday, but we're going to go over the Mishnah again, and we're going to focus on the two different categories of Nidre Havai. The Mishnah says, when Chavdal Amud Bey, starting with the Mishnah, Nidre Havai, Amar Konim Imla Reiti Kedero Chazek Ho'olim Mitzrayim. He says, I'm going to take upon myself konam, meaning these fruit are going to be asur to me, or any food, but usually the case is the fruit. These fruit are going to be asur to me if I didn't see a crowd gathering as large as the number of people who left Egypt. Or the second example in the Mishnah, I'm telling you, I saw a snake with ridges on its back. Let's just make the Gemara is going to assume, I don't know how well you know snakes, I don't know how well I know snakes, I mean, I've seen them, but the Gemara is going to assume that there's no such thing with snakes with ridges on its back. Okay, I know they look scaly, but in other words, we're talking about like actual ridges, bumps on the back, if you will. Either way, he makes a neder that, again, the number, I'm telling you, I saw the number of people who left Egypt. Or, I saw a snake with ridges on it. So both of these cases, these are exaggerated expressions, even though he made a neder to this effect. But they are so exaggerated that the neder is not going to be a valid neder. We saw the Ran yesterday, but let's review. The Ran says that these two examples are two totally different examples that are given, and really they are two different categories of Nidre Havai. Meaning within Nidre Havai, the Ran says we can even subcategorize into example A and example B. Let's go over both points of the Ran. Example A. Example A, I saw the same number of people as the people who left Egypt. Right, 600,000 men left Egypt. 2 million people approximately left Egypt in total. I saw that number. Now, you're making a claim that I'm bound by neder if I didn't see that many people. The Ran says over there, it's a figure of speech. Meaning, you're not even lying. Meaning, it's just simply people speak in hyperbole. People speak in exaggerated form. So when you say that I saw that number, it's understood between the communicators, between the one speaking and the one listening. It's understood that you don't mean that literally. You're just being hyperbolic, and it's not a neder because you're not lying, because it's simply a form of speech, right? I saw a million people, right? I saw tons of people. It's just the way we speak, and so therefore you're not going to be bound by neder simply because there wasn't accurately 600,000 people that were there. The Ran says that's category number one. So category number one is exaggerated speech, which, because that's how people talk, it's not even a lie, right? The Ron's language is kushta. It's true what you're saying. True meaning not to be taken literally, but that's just simply a manner of a way of people speaking. Category number two, says the Ron. Category number two, there's no such thing with a snake with ridges on its back. And you make a neder and you say, I'm going to be bound by neder if I didn't see a snake with ridges on his back. Similar, if I can give a modern example, right, when pigs fly. Right, when pigs fly, an expression that we use often, meaning it's exactly the point. It's ridiculous, it's impossible, it's silly. And you know and I know as I make such an expression that pigs are not flying, it's just an expression. Nobody's bound by a neder as a result of that. Good. So in other words, we're moving, says Aran, from a case where it's just an exaggerated form of speech, that's category number one, to an absurd language, that's category number two. But because it's either exaggerated or absurd, either way, it falls under the category of Nidra Havai, and therefore, as a result of that, the neder is simply not a neder. Period. Ad kan divrei HaMishnah, and with the explanation of the Ron. By the way, the Ron is much longer than the way I presented it, but you can see inside, I gave you a short version of the Ron. Tana. Now, we start with the Gemara. We didn't see this yet yesterday. We're starting now new territory. Nidra Havai Mutarin. Now, here the Girsa of the Gemara is a little bit tricky. I'm going to go with the Ron's Girsa of the Gemara. You can see on the side of the Gemara as well, they have a similar Girsa. I'm not going to be reading it the way it's presented in the Gemara itself. Kishem, you don't see that word in the Gemara. Kishem sheneder havai mutarim, kach shvus havai mutarim. Just like neder, which are exaggerated forms of neder, is going to be mutar, so too shvua, in exaggerated forms of shvua, is also going to be mutar as well. Again, that's the Ron's Girsa of the Gemara. And if you take a look at the first Ron in the Gemara, he writes, Klomar, Shapers mutar mishem ha'u time at the Prishna b'masisin. Mi u b'mide de lo shayach b'guzma kigon gamo aparech b'avir v'nachash kakors b'zabad, ki tali ister peros alayo laki mishem shvua shav, diul ala esra peros nizkavein. So the Ron points out the following. Look, when you're making a shvua shav, a shvua shavai, right? So the Ron says you have to keep the following in mind. And this is an important distinction between neder and shvua. You see, by neder, well, again, there are two expressions that were used in our Mishnah. Either number one, I'm bound by neder if I didn't see the same number of people who left Egypt. Right? I saw hundreds of thousands of people. Again, the point is, that's fine. Because that's how people talk. And you're not lying. You're just exaggerating. And exaggerated speech is considered within the parameters of speech. That's fine. And the Ron says basically the same thing would be true by Shvuah, as we're gonna clarify in just a moment. But now we get to the second statement of the Mishnah. Second statement of the Mishnah is, I saw a snake with ridges on its back. There's no such thing with snake with ridges on the back. It's a ridiculous statement. So in the world of neder, you get a perfect pass. Meaning, there's no such thing as snakes with ridges on its back. You're fine. Here's the problem. Now what the Gemara is saying, according to the Ron, is that just like it's fine by neder, it's fine by shvua as well. You see, by a shvua, now here it gets trickier. Because by a shvua, we have a concept called shvua shav. Shvua shav means that when I make a statement that's simply absurd, and I fortify and I solidify with a shvua, so that's an issur in the Torah. You're going to get malchus for saying a shvua shav. So, you may not be bound by the shvua. This is a tricky part of the Gemara now. You may not be bound by the shvua, but at the same time, in the second example of the Mishnah, you're still uttering a shvua shav. So, just to try to be clear, the Gemara's point is going to be, and again, Rav is going to make this even clearer, but the Gemara's point is going to be as follows. Despite the fact that you just violated a shvua shav, because you swore that the back of the snake has ridges on it, and again, the assumption is no such creature, no such animal. It's tantamount to saying, like pigs fly. In other words, it's just simply an impossibility. But and because it's so absurd, you're not going to be bound by the shvua, whatever you connect it to the shvua, but still, what you're saying is absurd, and it's still going to be a shvua shav. Okay, just an important point that Ron brings up over here, and just important to take into consideration. So now, let's go over the Gemara again. with the girsa of the Ran. Kishem she nidre havai mutar, kach shvuos havai mutar. Mutar is just like a neder, an exaggerated neder. As much as so too is an exaggerated shvuah. Now, the Gemara wants to pinpoint exactly what we're talking about. Hechidami shvuos havai. What do we mean by that? Ilei madamer shvuah. Im lo reisi b'der chazeh. So the Gemara starts off by saying as follows. Meaning, we're looking for parallelism between the case of neder and the case of shvuah. So the Gemara says, well, maybe he's making an oath that he did not see. To which the Gemara says, Midam Kamar? What do you mean? I'm swearing I didn't see this number of people. Like, that's not... Meaning, you're swearing to something that you didn't see. People, that's not even a shvuah. To which the Gemara says, Amar Elam, I'm sorry, Amar Abaye de Amar Shvuah Shiraisi. So the Gemara says, okay, so you know what? He made a shvuah that he did see. So Amalei Rava Imke Lamalei Lameimar. So the Gemara says, so Rava says to Abaye, so first of all, seems pretty straightforward, seems pretty clear. And number two, va'od dumya dinender katani. And also Rava says to Abaye, look, that's not what we're trying to do over here. We're trying to create parallel cases between neder and shvuah. Again, what was the case of neder? I'm telling you, I will be bound by neder if, meaning, he claims that he saw something, he claims that he saw the number of people that left Egypt, and if he's telling a lie, he's going to be bound by neder. So in other words, there's a neder connected to the statement that he's trying to make. So the Gemara says, Rava says to Abaye, aren't we trying to do the same thing by Shvuah? Meaning, we're looking for a parallel scenario by Shvuah. So Alam Rava ba'omer yasu peres ha'olam alai b'Shvuah im la reisi b'derech hazeh kolim Mitzrayim. Okay, there we go. So Rava says, this is going to be the parallel case, where he says that all the fruit in the world are going to be prohibited to him through a Shvuah, if I don't see this number of people leaving Egypt. Good. So now with what Rava has done, he's created a parallel scenario. So and as a result of that, just like by neder, it's exaggerated speech and it's fine. So too by shvuah, it's exaggerated speech and it's fine. But again, the Ran points out, but there's something else you have to take into consideration, and that is that by the shvuah, there's a problem with shvuah shav, which is true, but it doesn't take away from the fact that it's still exaggerated, and therefore he's not going to be bound by that shvuah to prohibit all the fruit of the world upon himself. Okay. Amalei Ravina Ravashi. Now, here we go now with a very basic Gemara and a very basic discussion. We say that exaggerated speech is okay, and you're not going to be bound by neder, and you're not going to be bound by shvuah. Okay. Vidilma. The Gemara asks now a fundamental question. We are in Chavdal Amud Beis. We're two lines from the bottom. V'dilma egavra kina d'shum shane chaza v'asik lun shma ola mitzrayim v'shapet mishtaba. Look, he made a shvuah and he says, if I didn't see the same number of people who left Egypt. Now, the expression I said in English is people, but let's say he says, if I didn't see the number of the same number that left Egypt. Okay, so I got to take the word people out of the sentence. And maybe, says the Gemara, the intender of the Shvuah was not referring to a group of people, human beings, but maybe he saw an ant pile. And there were thousands, hundreds of thousands, maybe even millions of ants on this ant pile, and maybe that's what he was referring to. And even though everyone who's listening to him did not think that he was talking about ants, but nevertheless, maybe he was referring to ants. In his mind, that's what he was connecting it to. And maybe the shvuah can be understood to be literal. Meaning, we said a moment ago that this is a shvuah shav. It's ridiculous. It's an absurd statement. The Gemara is now suggesting, based on our understanding, you're right, it's absurd. But maybe he had the most bizarre interpretation of that which he's saying, and at least from his standpoint and from his mind's eye, what he's saying is absolutely accurate. To which the Gemara says, this is a fundamental issue. Whose interpretation do we go with? The standard interpretation? Or can we go with his own subjective interpretation of that which he's saying, even as absurd as it may be? So that's the Gemara's question. Hi, Gavrikin Adusham Shanachazavazak Lun Shema Olim Mitzrayim Vishapir Mishtaba. Maybe he's making a good Shvuah. Top of Chafei Amad Aleph. Amalei Ki Mishtaba Daiti Didan Mishtaba. To which the Gemara's answer is no. When a person makes a shvua, he does not have his own intent in mind, but rather he has our intent in mind. We're not thinking about ants. When a person sees it, when a person says, I saw the same number of people that left Egypt, meaning just like it was human beings who left Egypt, people leaving Egypt, so too his in, the intent of his statement, understood, the standard understanding would be, it's talking about people, it's not talking about some sort of ant farm, some sort of ant pile. Okay. And to which the Gemara says, is this true, is this accurate? The Aldate Denavshe Lo Avid Inish the Mishtaba Vatanya. The Gemara says, let's consider the following brisa. Kishain Mashbino, so this is the Gemara Shavuos. And this is talking about a scenario where we're forcing somebody to make a shvuah. And we're very clear to them when we say to them, Omrim Lo, Hava Yodea, you should know. Shelo al Tanai Shabalib Chanu Mashbiyah Mosach, Ela al Da'atena va'al Da'as Beisdin. So the Gemara, we say to him as follows, we're not going, you're about to make your shvuah. And do not think for a moment that your shvuah is going to be based on your understanding, but rather, Ela al Da'atena va'al Da'as Beisdin. It's going to be based on our understanding and on the understanding of Beisdin. Now some have the girsa over here, not our understanding, but Das Hamakom, meaning God's understanding. I mean, God knows exactly what you're intending, and God understands the truth of the matter, and al Da'as Beisdin, and our understanding. So we clarify with him right before he makes a shvua, don't think it's based on what you think, it's what based on what HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows, and it's based on what we think. Meaning, standard understanding. Now, it's interesting. Basically, we're serving him notice. You're about to make a shvua. Don't think you can get away with your understanding. It's going to be based on our understanding. Now, it's interesting because it's very clear that they have to serve him notice. Had they not served him notice, so then it sounds like he can get away with a shvua based on his own personal understanding of what he's saying. So, my la la fugid asik lu las kundare va asik lu shma zuze. So, the Gemara says, I'll give you an example. A number of cute examples that are coming up. Cute, by the way, not like cute meaning tricky, like deceptive. Number of examples. Example number one, the Gemara says now is as follows. Let's say the following, right? I'm not endorsing, but, you know, poker chips is like a currency. But I'm using poker chips as a modern example. But basically, he has got these little playing sticks or playing twigs. And he gave them his own nickname. He called them money. He called them coins, even though they're not coins. And maybe... Again, what's the issue is he's being brought into Beis Din because he owes money, and there's a claim against him that he didn't pay, and he's about to make a shvua. And what the Gemara now is suggesting is that maybe what he can do is, he's got his little poker chips, he calls them coins, that's his own name that he's given them, and so maybe he's going to come into court and he's going to say, well, you know, yes, I lost the poker game, and yes, I gave over the chips. Now, again, he's not saying any of this. And my chips, I call them money. So you know what? He's going to stand in court. He's going to put his hand on a chumash and he's going to say, I swear that I gave the money over. And in his mind, money is another way of him describing his poker chips. So the asiklu la askundare va asiklu shma zuze, he calls them by the name of Zuz. And by that now we're telling him, in of itself, that would have been a fine shvua. But we're telling you that right now we're not accepting that as a shvua. Meaning, isn't that exactly what we're trying to prevent by warning him and serving him notice? Don't do that. It's because, in general, he could do that. And it would work. The Gemara is suggesting, isn't that so? Now, if that's so, so then that discredits our premise. The premise of the Gemara is that a person cannot make a shvua based on his own personal understanding, but rather on what is common understanding. Gemara says, lo. La fuke mekanya derava. The Gemara says, nope, absolutely not. In fact, what's going on over here is that we are worried that he's going to create a deception, not based on the interpretation of words. No. But rather, he's going to create a different type of deception. The Gemara gives an example over here, Kanya Derava. We've seen the story earlier in Shas. We get to see it again. It's a wild story. So a person was owed money to by his friend, and now he takes his friend to court. Okay, so enough already. You owe me money. You need to pay me. You haven't paid me in some time now. And enough already. We go to the court, and they go to the court of none other than Rava. So they turn to the lover, they turn to the bar, and they say, okay, you got to pay me. Amalei Peraticha. So the lover says to the malva, what are you talking about? I paid you already. Parenthetically, he's lying. But that point will become clear in just a moment. Amalei Ravim Kain Zuli Shtavale De Parase. So Rava says to him, look, you have to make a shvua that you paid already. Meaning there's a claim outstanding against you, and you're denying it, so you have to make a shvua that you paid. Now, in a moment, I'm going to clarify what kind of shvua are we talking about. But in the meantime, however, let's just stay with the story, and let's just follow the wording of the Gemara. Azal Rava, Amalei Rava, Im Kein Zili Shavalei De Parase. Sorry, I reread that line. Azal Va'ise Kanya Ve'yai Zuzi Begavei. So the Gemara tells us now, but the Gemara, in storytelling, tells us, gives us the reveal, maybe a little bit too early, but it's okay. The Gemara is not interested in drama. Gemara is just interested in presenting to us what happened. So he had a cane. The cane was hollow. And what this guy did, this is a lover, the borrower, is he took the coins and he put them inside the cane. Okay, good. So now it's like a money belt, but instead of a money belt, it's a cane belt. It's a money cane. And so he puts money inside the cane, and now when he walks into the court, he's got the cane, he's holding the cane as if he needs help walking, and the money's inside the cane. And now, Vahava Mistamich Vahazil, at this point, up until this point in time, he was leaning on the cane. Vahasi Allah Allah Bay Dina, and he took the cane with him to court. Amale Lamalva Nikort Haikanya Biadecha. And he said to the malva, here's what I want you to do. I need both of my hands because I'm about to hold the Sefer Torah in my hands as I'm about to make a shvua. Could you hold my cane for me? So the malva says, sure, no problem at all. So the lova hands over the cane to the malva, nasav Sefer Torah. Then the lova takes the Sefer Torah in his hands, v'ishtava depare koma dehava lebiade, and then he makes a shvua that he paid everything that he had. So, and now, consider now what just happened. He handed over the money to the malva, unbeknownst to the malva, because the money was inside of a cane. But he handed over the malva. Then he was holding a sefer Torah in his hands, and he swore, yeah, I give the money over. Of course. And you know what? Technically speaking, he's right. He did give the money over. Hahu malva ragas. Now when the malva heard this, he got so angry, meaning it was ridiculous. Meaning, not only did he not pay me, but he just swore that he gave me the money? That's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. He got so angry. V'tavra l'ukanya. So he took the cane. He broke it. V'ishtapech hanuzuzel ara. And all the money came out to the floor. V'ishtakech dekushta ishtava. And it turns out that really the truth of the matter is the lover was telling the truth. Period. Adkan, that's the end of the story.
So he can't pick up the money and everything is done.
Well, I think.
Right? I mean, if the money on the floor is his.
Well, I mean. Correct. In other words, no, you're right. The malva's going to pick it up. Had he not broken the cane, however, the lover would have just walked out. Okay. A couple things to be discussed over here. Again, everything I'm presenting right is coming right out of the Ran. So not an original thought, but no original thoughts on this. But the Ran writes as follows. First of all, the Ran says, this will involve the holding of a Sefer Torah. Right, we've seen this idea already a number of times, and that is that basically there are two types of shvuos. There's a shvuah min haTorah, and there's a shvuah min haDerabanan. And what's the difference between a shvuah min haTorah and a shvuah min haDerabanan? So, not that long ago, and I believe in Ksuvos, we talked about some basic differences between them. But one of the most basic differences between them is that a shvuah min haTorah is when the Torah imposes a shvuah upon you. There are only three circumstances where the Torah imposes a shvuah upon you. And a shvuah mid-rabbanan is where the chachamim, for various reasons, imposed a shvuah. practically speaking, what's the difference? Holding a Sefer Torah. If you're making a Shvua Min HaTorah, so you have to hold a Sefer Torah. If you're only making a Shvua Min HaRabbanan, so there's no Lakitas Sefer. You're not holding a Sefer Torah. So over here in our story, so this Lova was asked to hold a Sefer Torah. So he's making a Shvua Min HaTorah. Now, let's go over. What are the three circumstances of Shvua Min HaTorah? Number one, Eid Echad, where there was a claim against you with the testimony of one witness. So one witness by itself cannot extract money out of your hand, but one witness can impose a Shvua Min HaTorah upon you. Two is Moda B'Mitzas, where you make a partial admission. Three, Shvua Sapikadon, where you were asked to hold something, and then you claim, look, I'm really sorry, but law stolen, in other words, whatever exempts you from having to pay. So over here in our story, doesn't sound like any of those three. Meaning it sounds like it was just a simple taina. It was a claim that was made from the malva to the lova. So it doesn't sound like it fits under any one of the three categories. The Ran therefore writes, this must be a case of moda b'mitzas. The Gemara doesn't mention that. The Ran says, you're right, but it's got to be. In other words, just we're working in reverse. We see him holding a Sefer Torah. We know that holding a Sefer Torah is only for a Shvua D'Oraisa. So it's got to fit under one of the three. There was no corroborating witnesses. This wasn't a security being held. So therefore, it must be a case of Moda B'Mitzas. That's the first point that Ron makes. Otherwise, why else would he be holding a Sefer Torah? Okay. A second point made by the Ron. In the shvua that he actually made, the lova made, when the other person took the cane from him, he says, I swore that I paid him. The Ran says, it can't be. That cannot be the right girsa of the Gemara. Because even, again, in his ruse, in his deception, he can't make the claim that he paid him, because paid means that it was understood, the other understood, that he was receiving the money. So the Ran says that he prefers the following girsa. Hachanami vishtaba di yahavis lach zuza. The Ran says the correct way to read the Gemara, the correct girsa of the Gemara is, he swore that he gave over the money. Because the word payment would indicate that the Malva understood that he was receiving the money. So the Ran says he does not believe that that's the correct girsa, but the correct girsa is, I swear that I gave him the money. Okay, just a couple points made by the Ran. What comes out now from our Gemara is as follows. Right now the Gemara is holding steady on the idea that when a person makes a Shvua, so it's not based on his own personal interpretation, which is a weird interpretation, but it's rather based on the general understanding of what words mean. Okay? Al da samakum va al da tenu. That's number one. The Gemara is right now holding firm on that idea. However, even when you're holding firm in that idea, still there can be deception that's done. The Gemara just gave us a classic. Now we just made a classic example of deception where nobody's lying. He did hand the money over, but in other words, obviously it was a deception because the Malva did not understand that the money was actually being handed over to him. But he was right. In other words, technically speaking, accurately portrayed, he did hand the money over to him. Okay, and to that, that's why the judges warn each participant in a court case, look, understood that we're going to hopefully play by the rules, and hopefully we're going to play fair. And we just gave an example where one person did not play fair. Okay, next. The Gemara now is going to try once again to attack this basic premise that when people make a Shvua, it's based on general understanding of the words. The Gemara, we continue in the Gemara. The Akati lo avid mishtava adaita denafshe v'atayim. The Gemara says, is it really true that people do not make a Shvua based on their own interpretation? Let us once again consider now another Braisa. We find by Moshe, when he had the people, the Jewish people, swear by Arvos Moav, I'm going to make you make a Shvua, compelling you to follow all the mitzvahs in the Torah. And it's not going to be based on your understanding or your interpretation of the Shvua, Ela al da'ati v'al da'samakum, but rather it's based on me, and it's based on HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Shenem arvalo itchem levadachem. It's not going to be just for you, but it's going to be for everybody, meaning anyone who's here, anyone who's not there, even for us, 3,300 short years later, the Shavua is going to be for everybody. So my Amalu Moshe Yisrael. So now the Gemara is just bothered, meaning what could have been their understanding of the Shavua, and why did Moshe have to tell them that this could have been your understanding, but no. And again, the Gemara is bothered by the fact that if Shavuos are normally based on general understanding, so why did Moshe have to warn them? So the Gemara says, "Lav hachi kamar lahu delma avidetun mile ve'amrisan al da'atenu mishum hachi amar lahu al da'ati." So the Gemara says, maybe they had their own God, so to say. And when you and when they were making a shvua, they were doing so al da'atenu, based on their own das. Mishum ha'chemelu al da'ati, and that's why Moshe had to go out of his way and say no, not based on your understanding, but it's based on my understanding. La fuke. So the Gemara says it must be because even though they were swearing to God, but maybe they were swearing to not uppercase G, but lowercase G, meaning that when they said the word God, maybe what they meant by that is, and in English it's like it's perfect in terms of an analogy, meaning you have God uppercase G and then you have God lowercase G, and so maybe that's what they meant when they said it. And that's why Moshe had to go out of his way and tell them, not based on your understanding, but based on my understanding, uppercase G. So Michlal David inch the Mishav Adad Navshe. So the Gemara says, lo. Avoros kochavim ikrei Eloha. So the Gemara says, no, this is not a good example. Because when you say the word Eloka or Eloha, meaning, I guess now it depends whether I insert a, you know, I pronounce it correctly or not. But when you say that word, and it's not a funny understanding, it's either understanding, meaning it's either referring to Kadosh Baruch Hu, or it's referring to other gods. And either understanding is perfectly legitimate. It's not that one's a normal understanding, the other one is a very absurd, strange understanding. It's not like the example we gave earlier this morning, where I saw 2 million of those little guys. And his understanding was he was talking about an ant farm. In other words, that's absurd. And that, the Gemara says, is ridiculous. But over here, when you say the word Eloka, or in this case, Eloha, it's very well, it could either refer to Akash Baruch Hu, could refer to other gods. In fact, the Torah describes other gods with the words Eloha. Dichtiva v'chol Elohei Mitzrayim. Parshas Bo, the Torah says Elohei Mitzrayim, and that's referring to other gods, clearly. So the Gemara says Velishva Yashon. So then now what the Gemara is going to do basically for the rest of this Amud, almost for the rest of this Amud, is give a number of examples of what Moshe could have made them say with only one clear understanding. Meaning, rather than have to go through the procedure of warning them, it's not going to be based on your understanding, but it's going to be based on my understanding. Why not choose wording that only has one understanding, and that way Moshe doesn't have to give them the riot act. He doesn't have to warn them. So the Gemara now is going to go through a number of permutations of what he could have said that only has one definition.
Is it a swearing to Elohei, meaning idolatry, Shavuot Shav?
No, in other words, based on your understanding, you're swearing to other gods. Meaning, because there are no other gods?
I
guess it's tricky. In other words, in people's perceptions, there are other gods. The Egyptians thought there were other gods. Okay. Ulushavi Ason de Kimdemika Maison Mitzvos. So the Gemara's first suggestion is, well, why doesn't Moshe make them swear by mitzvahs? Mashma mitzvahs amelech. So the Gemara says, yeah, but mitzvahs could just simply mean the king's laws. But it doesn't necessarily mean the mitzvahs of the Torah. V'lishavi yasande mekam maison kol mitzvahs. So maybe make a shvua of kol mitzvos. Kol mitzvos is a reference to all the mitzvos of the Torah. So the Gemara says, mashma mitzvot tzitzis. So the Gemara says, no, not necessarily. Kol mitzvos can be a reference to tzitzis. Damar mar shaklua mitzvot tzitzis. Keneged kol mitzvos shebetorah. We know that tzitzis is tantamount to all the mitzvos of the Torah. or isa maso is chartem is kol mitzvos Hashem. The pasuk says. So you see that when you're wearing tzitzis, and you, everyone knows gematria, everybody knows gematria, that the eight knots, the eight strings. Hopefully, I know it as well. The eight strings, the five knots, the gematria of the word tzitzis itself. So that is 600. So that gets us to a total of 613. Okay, either way. In other words, tzitzis is reflective of all the mitzvahs of the Torah. So even if they said kol mitzvahs, maybe the shvuah was only limited to the mitzvah tzitzis. V'lishava yason demikamais in Torah. So the Gemara says, okay, so why does the Moshe make them make a shvuah on behalf of the Torah? So mashma Torah achas. So the Gemara says, no, because Torah just simply means one Torah. And we know Moshe came down from Har Sinai. He came down with Torah Shebichsav and Torah Shebaalpeh. V'lishava yason demikamais in Toros. So the Gemara says, so why does the Moshe use the word toros, the plural? Mashma Torah Mincha Toros Chatas Toros Asha. Gemara says again, because toros, even though it's in the plural, it could mean that, yeah, I'll buy into the karbanos, which the Torah describes the words Toros Minchas, Toros Chatas, Toros Asham, but only that. So V'lishava Yesen Dekamaisen Toros Umitzvos. So why does the Moshe say you're going to swear in front of Toros and Mitzvos? So once again, the Gemara deflects Toros Mashma, Toros Amincha, Mitzvos Mashma, Mitzvos Amelech. Okay, so once again, because it could be interpreted, Torah is only a reference to the Karbanos, and Mitzvah could just simply mean the king's demands. V'lishava yason dekamaisan Torah kula. So the Gemara says, well, why doesn't Moshe say to them, you're going to make a shvuah for Torah kula? The Gemara says, no, Torah kula mashma avos kochavim. The entire Torah could be just simply an abstention from worshiping idolatry. Detanya chamur avodas kochavim shekol hakofer bakilu moda b'torah kula. A denier of idolatry is somebody who subscribes to the entire Torah. And then the inverse also would be true. An acceptor of idolatry is someone who denies the entire Torah. So it could be that even if it says Torah kula, it could be a reference to just simply idolatry. So the Gemara says, well, okay, so why don't you have them swear that you're going to be bound by not worshiping idolatry and the entire rest of the Torah? Got you now? So now the entire rest of the Torah has to be a reference to the entire rest of the Torah. Or why don't you simply say, I'm having you bound by Yeshua to all 613 mitzvahs in the Torah. So the Gemara says, yeah, but Moshe Rabbeinu chose a language that did not involve a lot of tircha. And by the way, the Ran also points out over here, the Gemara in Shavuos has also the same discussion, and the Gemara in Shavuos also is bothered. Why not just simply say al da'ati? Why do you have to also say al da'ati v'al da'as ha'makom? So the Gemara in Shavuos says, around here quotes it, is so that not only are the Jewish people going to be making a shvuah, but it's going to be an unbreakable shvuah. Meaning we know the halacha is that if you make a public shvuah, there's no hafara. There's no breaking the shvuah. And now that the Jewish people are going to make a shvuah that they're going to be bound by the Torah, they do so al da'ati v'al da'as ha'makom, and by doing so, it's going to be now public and it's going to be unbreakable. Okay, Adkan. All right, that takes us to the end of the discussion. Right, almost an amud of Gemara dedicated to the topic of when you make a shvuah, based on whose interpretation of the shvuah do you go with? Do you go with the standard interpretation as understood by quote unquote most people, or can you even go with a looser interpretation? It happens to be your own personal interpretation, could make sense based on what you think. Do we go on that? And the Gemara basically concludes that we do not go based on your own loose interpretation of the words, but we go based on standard interpretation. And still, there's still room for deception, if possible. Not possible, but in other words, if you can think of one, the Gemara gave us a classic example earlier today of a deception, even within the parameters of understood language. Okay, deception is still well within the realm of possibility. Obviously, the Gemara does not promote it, to say the least. Okay, finishing up. One of the shvuas that was made in the one of the nedarim that was made in the Mishnah is I'm going to be bound by neder if I didn't see a snake that has ridges on it. Now, I'm going to explain the word. Let's just go through the Gemara. Now, I didn't give the strict literal interpretation of the Mishnah. The literal interpretation of the Mishnah is the size of the snake was the size of the beam of the olive press. The Gemara says, but there are snakes that large. There was a snake during the time of Shvar Malka. Ramulei Tleisar Vasa Detivna Uvala Yason, swallowing 13 chests. Okay, I don't know exactly. I have a good visual of what's going on over here. Suffice to say, it was a large snake, and it was the same size as the beam of the olive press. So the Gemara says, why is it such a ridiculous statement when they're out there? So Amar Shmuel b'taruf. So Shmuel says, no. What we mean is snakes with ridges on its back. So kula nachash mitraf tarfi. What do you mean? Don't you see the ridges of the snake along its neck? So agavo taruf kamrina. And the Gemara says, no. I mean, yes, but no. Yes, the snake does have ridges on its neck, but we're talking about the back of the snake. The back of the snake is smooth. It doesn't have ridges. Velisni taruf. So the Gemara says, yeah, but okay, why did the Mishnah just say that? Meaning, why did we have to spend a couple of lines of Gemara getting to that point? So the Gemara says, milga, milsa, agav, orche, kamash, milan. The Gemara says, oh, by the way, the Mishnah wanted to teach us that the Kars Beis Chabad, gavu taruf. That when you have an olive press, the backside of the beam of the olive press has ridges in it. And that's important information? The Gemara says, yeah. Lamai nafkamina, lamekar chomemkar. The Gemara says it's important information because, and the Gemara says this very often, when we go into a business transaction, a simple sale of a commodity, and I sell you and I report this is what it is, so in order for the sale to go through, it has to be that it is what I described it to be. You know, in the sale of house, I mean, a lot of you here know, the sale of house is sometimes the house is sold as is, which basically means whatever it is, that's what it's going to be. But generally speaking, right, when you sell something and you claim that this is what it is, so it's got to have certain identifying features, and if it doesn't, sales null and void. Mekach tos. So the Gemara says that you should know that the beam of a olive press has got ridges on its back, and if it doesn't have ridges, it's not an olive press beam. And if I said that I'm going to sell you an olive press beam and it doesn't have that identifying feature, it's just simply not a sale. The Gemara goes on to say, Lam lecham och akoros beis abad lechavero, igavu tarafin v'ilo lo. Fine. The Gemara says, so that's what the Mishnah is coming to tell us. Oh, by the way. We are up to now category number 3. We're on the Mishnah Chaf Hamad Beis, and we're about to begin the third category again. These nedarim that are being expressed in our paragraph, in the third paragraph of nedarim, are nedarim that just simply don't even get off the ground. They're not a neder, don't even require she'ela. So either because, number one, going back to the beginning of the paragraph, they're motivational nedarim. Number two, they're exaggerated nedarim. And now we're up to number 3. Nidrish gagos. So we'll give an example of a mistaken neder. Im achalti, im shatiti, v'nizgar sha'achal v'shata. So let's say he makes a neder. And the neder is, I'm going to be bound by neder if I ate. I'm going to be bound by neder if I drank. Meaning, someone came over to me. It doesn't have to be prompted, but someone came over to me and said to me, did you eat that? I'm like, no, I didn't eat it. I'm telling you, I'll be bound by neder if I ate it. I didn't eat it. Or I'll be bound by neder if I drank it. I didn't drink it. V'nizkar sha'ach v'shasa. And at the time when you made the neder, you actually forgot that you ate it or that you drank it. You didn't lie. You just forgot. Now, who knows? Kadosh Baruch Hu knows. And, of course, needless to say, the Mishnah here is describing someone who's telling the truth. So, v'nizkar sha'ach v'shasa. And then he remembers that he ate and he drank. So because at the time when he made the neder, he literally escaped his mind, he forgot. And so even though later on he remembers that he ate and that he drank, he's not going to be bound by his neder because he didn't actually think that he ate it or he drank it. Another example, Shani Ochel v'Shani Shoser. Another example, says the Mishnah, is he makes a shvua that I'm going to be bound by neder if I eat that or if I drink it. In other words, he's talking about a future. v'shachach, and he totally forgot. V'achal v'shasah, and he ate it, not remembering the neder that he made. That's also shogeg, and he's not going to be bound by the neder.
The future, all the neder will like this. There's a break. It's always because of forgetfulness, huh?
Well, the neder over here is going to be triggered, meaning the eating and the drinking is triggering the neder. And what he did is that while he ate or while he drank it, he forgot that this was supposed to be a trigger for a neder. And because at the time when he ate and drank, he didn't remember his neder, he's not going to be bound by his neder. Amar konem ishti nanesli shiganvas kisiv ishikas bini. The Mishnah gives another example. He says that his wife is going to be bound by neder. She's not going to get any benefit from him as a result of the fact that either she stole my money, he's talking about his own wife, or she hit my kid. Ganva. And it turns out now, it was false rumors. They weren't true. And as a result of that, again, the neder is not even a neder. Now, by the way, let's try to be clear about the Mishnah. If he said, I'm going to make a neder if my wife stole my money, so then we don't even need the Mishnah. It's clear now that the entire neder was built and a contingency that he thought that his wife stole his wallet, and it turns out that she didn't. But the Mishnah is making even a stronger point. The Mishnah is saying, I'm making a neder because she stole my money. So in other words, he didn't even make it as a contingency. But it's clear that the neder was connected to the idea that she stole his wallet. And it turns out later that she didn't take it. Okay, so even in that case, even though it wasn't a Tanai, but it was clear from the sentence that he constructed that the neder is connected to the theft, and if there was no theft, and once again, there's no neder, it's called the Shagaga. Ros and Ochlina Te'inim v'amar hare aleichem karban. Goes to his backyard, has a fig tree growing in his backyard, and sees a bunch of people eating at the fig tree. He doesn't recognize them. What's going on over here? What are you guys doing? And then immediately he declares, those figs are going to be konam, a karban to you people. I don't want you eating there. V'nimtzu aviv v'echiv. And then what became clear is that, oh yeah, two of them he did recognize. Dad, what are you doing back there? Or his brother. And v'hayu imayim acherim. And now it turns out now that of that group of people that he declared his neder against, so let's say one or two of them turns out to be his father and his brother. So Beit Shammai says, okay. So obviously he didn't mean the neder against his father. Let's assume he didn't mean the neder against his father. Excuse me. He would have been perfectly fine had his father been eating the dates, the figs. But according to Beit Shammai, the neder is not going to apply to his father, but it will apply to everyone else. Just give me a second. And Beis Hillel says no, that both of them are going to be mutter. It's going to be based on a principle that we're going to learn tomorrow, and that is neder shehutar miktsaso hutar kulo. Once part of a neder gets released, the entire neder gets released.
How can a person make a neder for others to prohibit something to them? Should be prohibited for yourself, neither, no?
No, you could do, in the world of Nedarim, when I say no, meaning you're right, but it can go in either direction. In the world of Nedarim, I can prohibit somebody else's possessions to me, I can prohibit some of my possessions to somebody else. The only thing you can't do in the world of Neder is I can't prohibit your property to you. That's what I cannot do. But your property to me, my property to you, that all could be, that all can be contained within a Neder. Okay, let's just start with the Gemara. Let's just cover up to the first two dots of the Gemara, and tomorrow we'll start with the topic of neder shehuta miktsaso hutar kulo. Tana kishem sheneder shagos mutar and kach shvos shagos mutaros. And once again, we're going to make the same statement like we made in the previous Gemara. This idea of shgaga is not limited to just nedarim; it applies to shvos as well. Hey chidami shvos shagos. The Gemara says, give me an example. Kagon Rav Kahana v'Rav Asi. The Gemara here gives an example. And the Ran says, this is not the only example that we're giving right now. The Ran writes that this is just, we're going to the, all the way to the end of the spectrum of what would give me an extreme example of what a shvuah shkaga would be? So the Gemara says like this: Rav Kahana, Rav Asi, Haden Amar Shvuah Sada Hachi Amar Rav, Haden Amar Shvuah Sada Hachi Amar Rav. Right? We see this a number of times in the Gemara. Rav said this. Says Rav Kahana. Rav Asi says, no, that's not what Rav said. Rav said this. And both of them are so sure that that's what Rav said, they both bind themselves by Yeshua based on their confidence that this is in fact what Rav said. Each one of them is making a Yeshua based on what he thinks is correct. Even if at a later point in time, let's say, however it can be proven, that he was wrong, but at the time when he said it, he legitimately thought that he was correct. And under such circumstances, even if he connects it with a shvua, it's going to be a shvua shkaga. If in fact it turns out that he's not correct. So just an extreme example of what would be a case of shvua shkaga. Okay, we'll pause over here, and we'll continue tomorrow. Just a quick recap. We finished the topic today of Nidre Havai, exaggerating Nedarim. Two examples in the Mishnah, according to the Ran, two different categories of Nidre Havai. Gemara says that not only is it true by Nedar, it's also true by Shvuah as well. That Shvuah's Havai also is not going to be a Shvuah. Where the big question of the day today was, when a person makes a Shvuah, is it based on standard understanding of language, or is it based on even his own absurd interpretation of that which he meant? The Gemara's conclusion seems to be standard interpretation of language. Even within standard interpretation of language, there can be deception being done. We saw an example of that today with the cane of Rava. By the way, you notice it's funny. The Gemara describes it as the cane of Rava. Right. It almost sounds like it's Rava's fault. It's not Rava's fault. He was a judge at the time. But the Kanya de Rava, that's the... It's
suspicious.
Yeah, correct. And finally, we started the third category of neder, and that is neder nidre shkagos, mistaken nedarim. The Mishnah gave a number of examples. Then the Gemara's point is that the same thing would apply to shvuah as well. That shvuah shkaga would not be enforced.